Miles Davis, so what? Well, I'll tell you so what. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash. This is Building Bridges.
A 1-2 punch to kick the arse of the ruling class. Take that, Jeff Bezos, as Amazon workers link up with the mighty Teamsters Union for unionization and for a fair contract.
We're joined by the founder and president of the Amazon Labor Union, Chris Smalls. Still a magical story of persistence and resilience in helping to create an uprising to build the ALU and for further organization of the working class to unionize.
Well, to put the movement, Chris, literally and figuratively back into the labor movement, Chris Smalls, what's the status of the unity of purpose, the affiliation anticipated between the ALU and the mighty Teamsters? And what would such an affiliation mean for unionization and a fair contract? And it's great to have you with us again.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And yeah, I mean, as I said, when we signed the agreement, I said it's a historical day in labor movement for American working class people. The Amazon Labor Union being the first union in American history to unionize successfully in JFK Staten Island 2 years ago. And the Teamsters, who just won a historical contract against UPS, one of the best contracts that's out there for union workers right now. And the timing of everything that we worked out in this agreement was just aligned to what is needed in the country right now. We need a strong labor movement, and we need unions to be appealing to the working class. And one thing for sure, the Amazon Labor Union is appealing to the working class. Since we won, we've seen a number of different historical union victories. We've seen how the movement spread not just here nationwide, but internationally as well. And I think the timing of all of this, including the timing of the pandemic, is a catalyst to why we see labor being such a force in the country right now. So we just hope that with the Amazon Labor Union and now with the IBT, that we continue to expand and grow, but also continue to educate and get people to join the working class, join the labor movement as well.
Chris, in terms of the labor law and in terms of union activism, is there an interaction there that you use to get this contract, or is it two different planes entirely?
Well, I mean, legally, we've done as much as we can legally. The problem is that these laws haven't been touched since the 1930s. You know, we're in a country where a lot of these labor laws are outdated. They're not aligned to the 21st century. And this is why companies like Amazon and Starbucks and Trader Joe's and Apple are able to hold up negotiations for years, because our system doesn't fit our needs right now. And we do have a progressive board. The NLRB has done some progressive things under the Biden administration. And I definitely have tried and applied pressure legally as well, and also creating laws in the New York State area, the Warehouse Protection Act that was passed last year by Governor Hochul. That's not just for Amazon workers. That's for any warehouse worker in the state of New York. So we've been on the ground for law, but we also know that on a federal level, we need to have some changes, some real changes, so that it'll make it easier for people to join the unions that we're creating.
Well, let me ask you this, since, you know, the mention of the National Labor Relations Board and the labor laws has everything to do with the prospective election in November, and we are filled, of course, with trepidation, to put it mildly, with the Trump candidacy. The question is, though, really, what do you do when we're kind of trapped with, for example, the Biden administration, which in my mind has done relatively little to support things like the PRO Act, which are a body of proposed labor advocacy laws that should become statutory in order to really push for and advantage the organization of the labor movement and so on? I mean, so how do you think, or what's your perspective on the upcoming elections, given the fact that you have extolled the virtues in many ways of a more progressive than the past NLRB?
Yeah, it's definitely a sense of urgency there, especially with this progressive NLRB that we currently have in jeopardy if the Biden administration is out in November. And that's always been in the back of my head, actually since, 4 years ago. And before that, prior, people don't know that we started organizing when Trump was the president. You know, he was still president for somewhat of 2020. And we had to organize in Staten Island under, which is only the red borough out of the five, is only Staten Island. So we understand how to bring people together. You got to talk about the working class issues. It doesn't matter whether you're left or right. I said that to Lindsey Graham when I was invited to Congress.
Oh, my God.
These issues are across the board. Mm-hmm. So we have to organize no matter who's the president, and we got to hold politicians accountable who claim to stand with labor. They're right here. We know who they are. We know who the players are in politics. We got to hold them accountable to actually not just use their mouthpieces, but write something in legislative in black and white.
Chris, not everybody may know how the National Labor Relations Board and the National Labor Relations Act actually affect the facilitation of the organization of union. So maybe you could just give us a little bit of background and understanding of how important and what they specifically did that facilitated you folks, the Amazon Labor Union, coming into power, getting a union election that was ultimately sanctioned.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can tell people this, the National Labor Relations Board is designed to be a mutual party, third party, that oversees the elections that we have when it comes to unionization. And in order to get that, you have to have 30% of your workplace. Once you get that threshold, you can file for union recognition. And when you file for union recognition, you'll be granted, if you have the numbers, you'll be granted an election. And then to win, you have to have 50% plus one. Once you have that, your union will be certified, and then you have the right to bargain. Unfortunately, the process is not that clear cut, because while you're doing this, the companies are fighting back, spending upwards of, for example, Amazon, $14.3 million of union busting. They're paying million-dollar lawyers to hold things up in court with frivolous appeals. And before you know it, 2, 3, 4 years went by, and they done fired everybody who signed a union card. So that's the issue now on the flip side of the NLRB, is that the process is way too long, and it's way too slow, and they get bullied by these major corporations a lot. Mm.
So in terms of the negotiations, what was the role of the union in not just filing legal complaints, but also protesting and threatening strikes?
Well, as I mentioned, since we won, the ALU has galvanized the labor movement, not just nationwide, but internationally. And since we won, there's been upwards of 25 different campaigns that have launched in the last 2 years outside of Staten Island. And some of them, for the first time in history, like Canada, have unionized successfully. There's been a union successfully with the CSDI, the CSDA in Canada. There's a union petition right now with Uniform in Vancouver. There's the GMB out in Coventry in the UK. And these are facilities that I personally visited and helped launch and talk to workers while I'm on the ground. So I see how this movement is continuing to grow. And we just want to do the best we can on the ground, but also once again hold politicians accountable to give us the source that we need, the resources.
Now, while I am so excited and continue to be from when I first met you and went to the first protests with the hot dogs and the that the s'mores so that were being made outside of the Staten Island warehouse to have an opportunity to talk to workers and to educate, agitate, and organize them into what became the Amazon Labor Union. The question now is, what the heck do we need to do to kick the arse of the working class, to send Jeff Bezos, one, two, you know, bing, bang, out into space for real this time, or shall we say really at the table for a contract that, as you've mentioned now, has been years in the coming, and we know how dangerous that is to keep the attention and activity going of the working people in the union.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the Amazon Labor Union that's going to take them down. It's going to be everybody, everybody in the community. So first thing first is just education. You know, a lot of people don't know what's going on with Amazon warehouses. So the education starts with our own selves. We have to talk to our friends, our loved ones, our neighbors, because they still are probably shopping on Amazon. And they are unaware that in the next few years, one out of every four Americans is going to have work for Amazon. Amazon has already hired and fired the entire American workforce in less than 30 years. And that is a shame. So our fight is absolutely everybody else's fight right now. And education is key to how we're going to bring and hold Jeff Bezos accountable, who is now currently the richest man in the world, if not the top three. And besides that, you know, once again, making sure that the youth, the younger generation, they get educated before entering the workforce. Invite myself and other labor leaders to the classrooms. I've been fortunate enough to visit a lot of schools and neighborhoods, and I love doing that, talking to kids that are 10 years old, are high schoolers, are college graduates, are on their way out, because they're the ones that's going to be leading the way in the fight that we're going to have to pass the torch to.
So this is another creative and meaningful move, and it takes me back to what I've read certainly about the unions in the 30s and stuff, which came from, so many of them came from the immigrants movement and the immigrants rights movement, and they percolated up for and were a symbiotic part of the community. So you're really serious about building a labor community relationship, labor not going it alone, but really getting that mighty fist. Yeah, the union power of Teamsters combined with the ALU, but the issue of really joint activity, so we see ourselves as labor and community is really part of the working class to take down the plutocrats. Have you got some you know, this real sense that this is moving people and that they understand the imperative of not seeing us as anything other than two wings of the same bird?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean by, you know, even the labor movement, we have to change the way we look. You know, the Amazon Labor Union, culturally, we look different. You're not going to find too many black and brown led unions in the country. You're not going to find too many black and brown presidents in the labor movement. And that's a conversation by itself. So we're changing how labor looks. We're changing how labor is appealing to the younger generation, as I mentioned. Of course, a lot of people love our fashion. They love our music. They love our food. They love our culture. So when you're talking about community and fighting for community, you have to understand that no matter what industry, no matter what movement you're a part of, at the end of the day, you're a worker. And that's the part of labor. And labor should represent everybody, no matter what part of the working class you're a part of. And hopefully, you know, with the things that the Amazon Labor Union and the Teamsters are going to do in the near future, that will change the culture of the entire labor movement.
In terms of what's happening beyond New York, at least New York City, in a lot of cases, the unions are forced to negotiate with an entity which is sort of put forth, and it's not the employer itself, it's a third-party entity. And that distracts from the main point of contention, which is the employer versus the workers. Could you talk about that?
Well, yeah, we intend not to negotiate when it comes to that. You know, we want to have workers in the room. My vision of what I see when it comes time to negotiate is, you know, they come in the room with their $1 million lawyers and I come in the room with 100 workers from the warehouse. You know, and the lawyers have to sit aside for this one. We don't want nobody talking for the behalf of the workers. We want this to be a worker issue. And we want them to have their demands and their voices heard, full stop. And I think when you have that foundation, you're showing your true power to the company. You're saying that the workers are not going to move unless their demands are met. And I think having a third party, you know, to interfere with that is just the wrong way to do it. It should be the rank and file members because they're the ones who make Jeff Bezos who he is. So that's the way we plan on negotiating when we come to that. But once again, we know that Amazon is going to put up every fight that they could, like they have been. And we just have to continue to organize. That's what's continuing to open doors for us.
Well, also, of course, work to the end of redistributing the stolen wealth, stolen from the workers who created it and created all the value from Jeff Bezos so he can stop playing games with our money. Or if he wants to go into space, let him go and stay there this time. But while we work on
to
that...
To the moon, please, to the moon.
While we work on that longer strategy... Chris, you mentioned, well, maybe you can give us some preview of some of the combined strength and plans of the mighty, the powerful, the muscular Teamsters in affiliation with the Amazon Labor Union. What are some of the things that you have in terms of workers' tactics and strategies to put pressure on this company? And who knows, goodness, let's maybe at some point cooperate the company and have it run by workers. But I guess we can talk about nationalization or some facsimile a bit later on. But what are some of the ideas that you have or been tossing around to continue to put that labor community pressure on that behemoth Amazon?
Well, I can tell you this. When we signed that agreement and announced it, we definitely ruffled Amazon's feathers, for sure. Jeff Bezos didn't sleep well that night. And that's because the Teamsters, one of the most powerful unions in the country that have 1.5 million members, that has $350 million in strike funds. That's a scary thought when they just linked up with the Amazon Labor Union. So now that we have the strength in numbers, we plan on doing whatever it takes. And if it gets to the point where we have to authorize a strike, one thing that we negotiated and the one thing that the Teamsters is offering is strike benefits. So we'll be able to offer our workers strike benefits for the first time ever in history. And that right there is powerful. And that's something that we're going to be looking into later in the year, especially around holiday season, to be in a position to call a strike if need be, so that we can get our first contract.
You know, one of the things you pointed out to me, that abroad, there is labor organization, there is unionization of Amazon facilities. Yeah. You know, we looked at the UK, and we looked at Canada and a number of other places. What do you think made the difference? Why was the nut able to be cracked there more readily than in the United States?
Oh, wow. Well, I can tell you what, we're in a country where union density is less than 6%.
Yeah.
We're in a country, and that's in the private sector. We're in a country where less than 10% in the public sector. Those countries I'm visiting have 90% union density. So it's a completely different ballpark. It's embedded in their culture. Everybody's in the union. If you're not in the union, you get frowned upon. So we're in two different countries. And unfortunately, these countries have labor parties. We don't have that here. We have a two-party system, as you know. So there's just a completely different landscape of how their government works. Their laws are ironclad. and improving because they have strong unions. And the unions, they are, I don't know, they seem more militant than the ones we have here when it comes to on a national level. They work together a lot more than we do, a lot more often than do. And that right there, those relationships, they go back, you know, hundreds of years. And I've learned that just by visiting France and Italy one time, that unions exist at Amazon for over a decade. So we have to understand that there's better out there. And we have to hold, once again, the politicians and our president accountable, because these other countries have way better laws that we can absolutely have over here in America as well.
Yeah, we certainly see that in Italy. We see that in France. We see that in South Africa and the like. Well, one of the things that everything you were talking about is it's political. You certainly want better wages, better contracts, better conditions that are spelled out in fair contracts for workers, grievance procedures and the like. But you're also talking about unions in a very political way, not just an economistic way. And with that, I know that the Amazon Labor Union has some strong feelings and positions, which is so critical around genocide and around the genocide that is being committed in our name in Palestine. And I wonder if you can talk about the place of what the position is and the place of that kind of political organization within the structures of the working class.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very fortunate that my union has chose to put out their statements about Palestine very early on. It's on our Instagram. It's on our website. We have a statement that was very powerful in the beginning. And I remember when I first spoke about it, I lost about 7,000 followers overnight. And I had people all in my DM saying, oh, we supported you during Amazon, but this is not it. And I, you know, my simple response is this. You know, Amazon has absolutely everything to do with genocide. They invested $7.3 billion into this project called Project Nimbus. And Project Nimbus is with supporting Israel's military surveillance, their government surveillance, and contributing to the genocide. And we cannot stand with that. And I see how other unions have finally spoken up. It took them a while, at least the ones over here, and it started saying ceasefire. But we have to understand that the Palestinian people are a working class people as well, and they're built in their country was built on the backs of labor unions. So that I understood that when I met with their former MP, Dr. Bugatti Mustafa, and I'm going to continue to educate myself and educate my members as I receive information. And I allow my union members to speak their minds. And on this issue, it was a no-brainer for us. We do not support genocide, and we do not support Amazon investing into genocide. And we stand with the working class people and the people of Palestine.
So it's a two-pronged strategy. It's whatever the workers can do to boycott, divest, and sanction. And it's another strategy, which is the community needs to understand the relationship and BDS that Amazon has with
Absolutely.
The state of Israel. So in the final analysis here, what do we in the community do to keep that fire alive? You know, you fire me up, can't take no more every time I listen to you for a meaningful expansion of the working class, a democratic expansion of the working class, unions, and all forms of local worker organizations by any other name that belong to the hands of the union to, I hope, really become a unit to assume state power, power to the workers. What are your final thoughts on the function and imperative of really building a fighting working class here and the greater unionization? Give us that final fired up, can't take no more message.
Well, I want to say this. I want to say rest in peace, Jane McAlevey. I was fortunate enough to spend time with her. And I was fortunate enough to learn a lot of her insights. And I'll never forget our conversations because she saw this affiliation before I did. I tell you that. And when it comes to the working class and where we at right now as a country, I can say this, no amount of money in the world can amount to the power of people when we come together. We've proven that going up against a $1 trillion company like Amazon. We've proven that Jeff Bezos can go to space and we can still organize. And we're going to continue to prove them wrong. We're going to continue to bring people together. I'm going to continue to educate people. And most importantly, we're going to continue to win. And Jane McAleevy said it best, you know, you got to fight like hell and you got to fight back and fight and fight and fight some more. And that's just what we're trying to do with the Amazon Labor Union, continue to fight. And I would say this, as where we stand right now with Palestine, support the students that are starting these encampments. I've been out there all across the country and other countries at encampments. And I'm telling you, what inspires me is looking at our youth and our younger generation right now. They're the ones leading the way. And those encampments reminded me of the 300 plus days that I spent outside at a bus stop at JFK Staten Island that got Amazon unionized. So we have to start off grassroots and invite our communities into these grassroots movements and continue to educate and expand. And once again, remind ourselves that the revolution starts with ourselves. Mm.
Chris Smalls, founder and president of the Amazon Labor Union. Keep on keeping on for the working class.
That's right. We mourn the dead and we fight like hell with people like Chris Smalls for the living. Chris, thanks. We'll see you on the next picket line.
Absolutely. Take care. Solidarity.
Solidarity forever. Well, talking about solidarity, talking union, I'm Mimi Rosenberg, and thank you for inviting us to be heard in your house.